The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Time now to join our panel and have a look at what's doing the rounds in the newspapers. We've got Aisling O'Rourke, communications coach and podcaster. And we have Paul Hayes, CEO of Beach Hut PR. Morning, guys.
Good morning, Colm.
Good morning.
So we were just talking all about the Olympics there and some stories floating around about it. Obviously, Rashida is making all the headlines. Did you manage to catch any of the action yourselves?
Of course. I've been addicted to it. And yeah. I am a sofa expert, I think, I at this point in the Olympics now. But I just, I think Rashida is absolutely fabulous. I like, look at all the Olympians. As a proud Offaly woman, I was very proud to see Shane Lowry, you know, bringing in the Olympic flag and all that for the opening ceremony. And like, there's still 24 hours left. Like, the girls are in the relay tonight. It's just a wonderful summer looking at all these Irish athletes who put everything on the line to represent the country.
And it's the variety as well. I mean, we have heptathletes, you know. We have before it was usually just focused on one particular athlete and maybe a medal was out of the question. Yeah. And how quickly we've come to a position where we get a bronze and you're like, am I meant to be happy or disappointed? You know, but it's incredible. But actually, speaking of medals, there was a story doing the rounds this morning about possibly the quality of one of the medals
yes.
not being up to par.
It's tarnishing rather quickly. For the jewellery wearers amongst us, that is not uncommon. And there are things that you can buy, and I haven't seen one in a shop in a long time, those like silver cleaners, little wipes, like glasses wipes to keep your jewellery shining. But apparently it's even chipping. Like, I can understand why. Like, obviously, these Olympians, once they get a medal, like, if it was me, I wouldn't want to take it off. So they're going to get sweaty and maybe perfume or deodorant, you know, and that'll tarnish it. But what surprised me is that they're chipping. And you'd think they'd be a bit tougher.
I saw the whole thing of you bite your medal, because that used to be when the medal was 100% gold and it's quite soft and you can do it. Now it's like 2% gold or whatever. Mm. But I mean, you know, the symbolism of biting your medal is quite good. I was watching the breakdancing last night and it's joyous. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. But the breakdancing just felt like a thing too far. I do notice that you've got the women's beach volleyball on in the background here, Dermot. And,
that is, you know, purely coincidental.
I was going to be purist and go, it should just be the original Greek fight and shoot and throwing things, wrestling. But I'm open to the other sports. I just thought breakdancing was a bit kind of thrown in there.
I think, you know, in the originals, the spirit of the original Olympics, it was more of an artistic flair, you know, back in ancient Greece. So why not? But I think, I mean, to look at them, the stuff they can do physically is very impressive. And, you know, I enjoyed it, I have to say. I enjoyed that blend of the street culture and sporting culture. Moving on to some other stories, Stardust News obviously was making all the headlines and is again today. The Cabinet has signed off on a €24 million redress scheme for the Stardust families. The redress scheme, which has been agreed with the families, follows the Stardust inquest verdict in April. And Simon Harris-Taoiseach has announced families to get €500,000 each. It's always a difficult conversation, isn't it, Aisling, to have, you know, after such a tragedy, to put a figure on it. But I guess, you know, it's a clumsy thing in terms of trying to, I guess, to redress, you know, to make amends. And sometimes money is, I guess, a symbol of some attempt being made to do that.
It is. It's a bit of a crass symbol, but it's all we've got. Stardust happened before I was born. That's how long the families have been waiting for justice and campaigning. I'd like, and I was reading it through the different newspapers this morning, and I don't see anywhere as to whether or not this compensation is tax-free. I'd sure hope it is, because they've been through an awful lot, but, you know, that's something to be considered as well. Like, 500,000, let's be honest about it. It's an awful lot of money. I certainly wouldn't turn it down if it were me. But is it enough? Given what these people have been through, this particular group of people, the fight that they've had, the trauma, like, would it even cover the counselling that you'd need to help you cope with what these people have been put through, this group of families and the pain that they've gone through over the last number of decades? I don't know that it's enough.
There was an interesting comment from one of the campaigners saying, you know, it won't give you closure. Closure is something you get in business deals. It's never obviously going to help you deal with the loss of relatives and loved ones.
Yeah, but whatever about it being too little, it's certainly too late because we just don't have a system here of full and open accountability for things, for redresses, quick, you know, while the people that are affected most, you know, their parents. I just felt, you know, as a parent of people that age that are now starting to go to discos, that's your life gone. You feel like you've let them, you know, it's just, that's when it should be. And hopefully that's what changes, that it just becomes something that we can be a bit more open about quicker and get to a redress or whatever closure it is quicker.
And you'd have to hope as well, sometimes the landing of a large lump sum into a family dynamic can actually cause more problems.
However many years later, because, you know, the originally affected, there's only some of the siblings left, I think, to a great extent. A lot of the parents, unfortunately and sadly, have been gone.
And like... It does speak to, though, that like open disclosure and the lack of that kind of a culture that we have. I'm reading a book at the moment by an Aer Lingus pilot, Niall Downey, who's a former cardiothoracic surgeon. And it's about,
Way to make us all feel inadequate.
Oh, I know. He's absolutely fascinating guy. But it's all about, you know, that culture, that aviation culture of if there's a mistake, you immediately open up that in the aviation industry. Yeah. Mistakes are expected every single day, and then there's a plan B, there's a plan C, a plan D, a plan E. Actually, I'd recommend it's oops, what to do when things go wrong, or why do things go wrong? But it's this culture that we have in this country where we can't say we made a mistake, we can't own up quick enough, and we delay that, and we delay the pain, and we add to the torture and the trauma by delaying it as much as possible.
I don't think it's particular to Ireland, though, and I don't think it's particular to an Irish government. You know, I mean.
I think we're particularly, it might not be particular to us, but I do think we're particularly bad at it.
I think it's also the legal system. You know, we do tend to overcompensate on the say nothing, don't admit anything, because the lawyers will tell us afterwards we were muppets for doing so. And sometimes just human decency needs to come through quicker.
Yeah. And I did think that, you know, Simon Harris does not have an easy task as Taoiseach. I think the state apology was delivered with a decent level of authenticity. And you think as a human himself, he definitely does feel, you know, he does have empathy for the victims' families. And I think, you know, as best as he could, I think he's handled it pretty well.
It's a particularly difficult job to be handed, particularly when he's so new in the role of Taoiseach. I think he's handled it very well. But I like nothing is bringing these people back that died. All of those people, all the families that were affected, you know, nothing's going to bring them back. This, I suppose, is a token of the nation's apology to them. And it's too late and it's too little.
Up north is making a lot of headlines, obviously, of what's been happening there in terms of the riots and demonstrations. Assistant Chief Constable Melanie Jones said the police are expecting a very busy weekend across Northern Ireland with the risk of spontaneous protest as well as scheduled events. And there are anti-racism demonstrations happening and the anti-immigration ones happening simultaneously. And I guess it's an impossible task for the police force there.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest contradiction of all times was the Kulak says no, people going up north, people who can't even agree on what country they think is full, being side by side. I think we should bus all our right-wing protesters up to the north because I think they put them in jail quicker. Certainly in the UK they do anyway. So that could be a great export story for us if we can send them up there. They're good at water cannons as well.
Well, it's certainly one, it's something that's made us question elements of our own judicial system and the process that we have. When you see a chap last week who put up a post inciting people on Facebook in the UK to attack hotels that were housing asylum seekers, he's already in jail serving 20 months. That would never happen here. I mean, people are stuck in the system for months.
More often than not in serious incidents, people appear in court and then are released on bail. Our system isn't adequate. It isn't coping with the level of incidents that it needs to, you know, and it's not resourced enough. There are too many delays. COVID is still having an impact. All of those cases that like that backlog, you know, is having a very serious impact. You look at the threats that Simon Harris and his family, his children, their babies have been like victim to on social media in the last number of weeks. And I think the way it's being handled in the UK makes it very clear to anybody thinking about participating that there will be consequences. Like there is, there's a journalist who received threats after covering court appearances in recent weeks where by law, as a journalist, if you're mentioning somebody who appears in court, the regulations are that if Dermot Whelan appears in court, your name, your age and your address is read out in court and is then reported on by the journalist so that you can't be mistaken with Dermot Whelan, you know, the podcaster. It's a different Dermot Whelan. And that's always done. But a particular journalist is under threat now because they did their job and the people involved didn't realise that that's a consequence of appearing in court in Ireland. That there's an awful lot of people's lives are going to be ruined because they're following trends on social media. They're going to have very difficult times getting jobs when they grow up. You know, there's going to be very serious consequences down the line, but that's not blatantly obvious here because they don't see consequences. Whereas if you're in the UK and you're going out to protest tonight, well, you've seen how many have been up in court already, how many have been sentenced already. And it does, I think, a bit more fear.
And the North is a perfect flashpoint for this because, you know, they can, the whatever proto-loyalists or whatever can come out and they're defending their communities and play the hard man, but play the hero in their own narrative in terms of what they're doing. And also the PSNI and formerly the RUC, they know how to respond to this as well. So it's going to be probably the sharpest interactions that we're going to see are probably going to happen there.
I think it's the personal stories a lot of the time, you know, from immigrants that really send the message home as to what it's like and that sense of anxiety that's growing, not only over the border, but here and in other countries. And in the Times, there's quite a touching account from a nurse in Belfast, a number of nurses, and obviously a lot of our immigrants work in health services here and in the north. Sipo Sabanda said that they feel anxious about travelling to work. They're worried that the taxi drivers they're meeting might be racist or people who are doing, you know, working with them side by side. They said there's very much a feeling of nervousness. We're worried about going into work. And then there's the anxiety because you don't know who's actually with you and who's against you, even amongst your colleagues, you know.
I think it goes back to social media, you know, Simon Harris being attacked on it and him coming out quite strongly against, you know, a lot of the unregulated aspects on X and everything else, because 99% of people are perfectly happy with other people. And it just gets amplified on. And then the 1% that are feel disenfranchised or have no stake in society or just, you know, want to cause aggro or they're just wrong-uns. They have this overwhelming, because it's what we report on, there's this overwhelming feeling of it's everyone, and it's not.
But what point do the social media companies have to step in and go, okay, you know, even if we had the best of intentions at the start, it's getting out of hand. If you look at the likes of Andrew Tate, you know, after that tragic attack in Liverpool on those children at the dance school, he immediately posted a video that saying that it was an undocumented illegal immigrant who just came in on a boat, when in fact it was, you know, someone who was born in Wales.
Yeah.
that got tens of millions of views.
Yeah.
And even Nigel Farage himself admitted that it was that. Now, if you're getting your news from Andrew Tate and you're a high profile politician, you know, you have to ask yourself some questions. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he was saying that, well, look, I heard this and that's why I said what I said. And, you know, these algorithms that and these echo chambers that people are trapped in, this is oxygen to this fire. And at some point, we have to ask ourselves, and these companies have to ask themselves, is this the world we want to live in to make a few bucks?
But look, Andrew Tate he recently said, white supremacists are saying that I'm too brown. So even he's lost control of his racists. And I think that's the problem. Mm. The social media companies at this stage, with so many bots, so many bad actors from Russia and China and everyone else, they don't control their own platforms. Mm. They can't. They can't even humanly intervene in them. They'd actually have to basically shutter to try and control these things. So unfortunately, in Europe, it's going to get regulated. In the US, it's going to be the Wild West. Yeah. And there are bad country actors from around the world. You know, TikTok and In Our Kids, this stuff is, that's the real cyber battlefield right now.
Mm. And there's an awful lot of this happening. Like, most of us are familiar with the big social media platforms, like the ones owned by Meta, WhatsApp, Instagram, Facebook and X, because, you know, they're always in the news. But a lot of this is going on other platforms like, you know, that we don't talk about, Snapchat, Snap Maps, Telegram, you know, and we're in a strong position in Ireland. We've got the Data Protection Agency for the entire European Union. Until these companies start feeling it in their bank accounts, they're not going to actually put measures in place. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think that they can actually control it, but they can make it more difficult for users to send out this vitriol unchecked.
And Musk has lost his tiny mind. And the problem in tech, and it's my sector, is they have this kind of exceptionalism, a lot of them. I fixed one small thing, but the internet made me a trillionaire, therefore I can fix everything. And they really can't, because they don't. They see it everything as just efficiencies or maximalization, when society is compromised. Society is, how can we all get along? And they're just like, but it has to be black and white, because I fixed this before in a black and white way. And this tech exceptionalism needs a, and I'm part of it, unfortunately.
Also in the papers today, Fine Gael Enterprise Minister Peter Burke thinks a €750 tax credit for people under 25 will stop young people emigrating. Best of luck with that. We were saying earlier it might just cover the flight to Sydney. But actually, before I leave you go, I want to move to a story that about the most common butterfly in Ireland has declined in numbers of 83%. It's dropped by 83% since 2008. And I don't know why this sort of hit me emotionally this morning. You'd think, you know, there's lots of so many bad things happening in the world and so many challenging stories. But when you think something as innocent as a butterfly that represents transformation, change, hope, and it's disappearing by 83% in the last 15 years, that's terrifying.
It is. Like, I'm from County Offaly. I've spent quite a lot of time at home in Tullamore this summer in the garden when the weather has allowed. I have yet to see a butterfly this summer, which I find quite sad and depressing. And I have to be honest, I wasn't quite sure what butterflies do, but apparently they're pollinators. They're like the bees. They pollinate the plants for us, so we need them for food security and all of that. You know, like they are.
I also
so
haven't
important.
Seen any butterflies in Tipperary. It's important those culchies spread.
Oh yes, now that the culchies overpower the dubs in students in studio.
But are we still seeing caterpillars? Are they just not going through chrysalis? Like, I want to know where the, like, is there loads of caterpillars, but they're just not, they've decided to stay in their shell kind of thing? What's going on?
What was a little bit frustrating in the story this morning in the Times, that it didn't quite give the explanation as to where they're all going. Maybe they're, you know,
maybe they got a tax break from Peter Burke.
Turning their nose up at 750 quid and all leaving us as well. But you think, like, you know, everything is fixable at some point, you know, but if the butterflies leave us, what hope do we have?
I had the pleasure of attending the premiere of Mary Robinson's new documentary about her life, which I think should be shown in secondary schools up and down the country when it's released in August, or at the end of August, right? But she was talking about, you know, climate change and the impacts of it. And like, her line is, it's a man-made problem that needs a feminist solution, because feminists tend to be the problem solvers of the world. And like, I think the good thing about this story is that we all know what a butterfly is. We all know that we should be seeing them out and about. We can understand that there's an actual problem because we can see the lack of butterflies. Whereas with climate change, it's such a big, massive, overwhelming existential threat that it's, we can't see it. We don't, it's not tangible. We don't really know. We can feel overwhelmed about it. Whereas if we, like, look at the butterflies, look at the bees, plant a few more flowers and native species trees, you know, we could at least try and have an impact.
Listen, it's on you guys now. You've declared it. You've taken it. Feminism, females, we have messed it up. We're willing to just retire, drink gin and play golf. It's time for you to fix everything and start with the butterflies, because I got, we've no energy left.
Challenge accepted.
We all run out with our seed bombs today and fling them everywhere. But look, thank you very much to our panel, Aisling O'Rourke, a communications coach and podcaster, and Paul Hayes, CEO of Beach Hut PR. Thanks for joining us this morning.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.